Hello, this is Tom Williams, and you are listening to Talk Theater in Chicago's interview podcast. I have finally got our special guest today up at Marriott Theater in Lincolnshire. I have the executive producer, Terry James. Welcome, Terry.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks a lot.
I've many times told people that I think Marriott is one of the top regional theaters in the United States, and certainly as good as any theater in Chicago.
Well, aren't you bright and well-informed?
I mean,
yeah, I think I'm prejudiced, but I would tend to agree. We have great talent up here, great designers and directors, and obviously...
Well, first of all, let me congratulate you on Shenandoah. I thought it was absolutely a marvelous show.
Thank you. Yeah, we were very, very proud of it. That we had a lot of support with the original authors, and the director, David Bell, had, you know, some beautiful ideas for it. They were very willing to, you know, let us take a stab at it. And we made a lot of trims in it, gave it a different feel orchestrally in some place so that there was more of a through line. But I think everyone would agree that the most effective thing we did was the casting of David Hess as
Charlie
Anderson. Yep. Yeah. He had a great take on it. It wasn't bombastic. It was a thoughtful performance.
One of the understudies in the show who remain nameless, who I know, told me he set the tone for that. With the first day of rehearsal, he came in, he was off book. He had everything down.
Yep.
He just set the bar so high, everyone was just blown away by that.
Yeah. You know, and it's, you always take a risk when you're hiring, when we hire anybody, but when you take, when you hire somebody from out of town that you don't know based on, you know, maybe a couple of auditions, you're not sure of their work ethic or their work, you know, habits or, now he certainly had a great reputation, so we had no doubt about his work ethic, but having never worked with them, we weren't quite sure what to expect, but it was a very unique process he had, different than any actor I'd ever seen. It was very slow. As it unraveled, you know, just one step at a time. A lot of times the actor's process starts with 110%, you know, they start over the top and then pull back and, you know, and start bringing in the
consistency. So he worked slowly inside.
The opposite, yeah. Exactly. Okay. And the cast loved it. It was one of those cases where it took to it day one.
And Shenandoah was one of those shows, I mean, he's the main character. It's the Jimmy Stewart character for
exactly.
Those that saw the film.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's he's on stage the entire time.
Well, congratulations on
Thank
that
you.
Show. It was I agree with Chris Jones. It was one of the finest shows that Marriott's ever done.
Thank you. We're
and
very
that says a lot because you guys,
of
most of your shows are just absolutely world class.
Thank you.
Tell us now. I don't know anything about Married Alive, the show that's just opening. When this podcast, when people start hearing it, the show will have just opened.
Right.
So tell us what we can expect.
Well, you can expect humor because the original title was From Niagara to Viagra. So that right
was
away.
Was it really?
Right away.
Is this a new show?
Something. It's brand new. We did the original workshop. We've been working on it for about 2 years along with the authors, Sean Grennan and Leah Akimoto. And we did the workshop for about 400 subscribers about a year and a half, 2 years ago. And the response was incredible from the subscribers. They laughed through the whole thing. And this was just a reading where, you know, the actors
and
were
these are real hip theatrical
exactly.
People that know what theater's about.
Right, from our subscriber pool. And so we decided let's develop this and get it on the season. And they booked the show into Kansas City. And they did it and made some more changes down there and at the Heartland. And we went down and one of my artistic directors, Aaron Thielen, has been heading up the project from our end and working with the authors. And this is the definitive version. This is the version that will be sent out after this. But it's a lot of fun. Sean Grennan wrote actually one of our biggest hits, which was Phantom of the Country Palace.
That's right. I remember that was one of your world premieres.
Yeah, exactly.
I remember
and
that.
It proved very popular. And he and his wife, who's actually in the show, Kathy Santon, who starred in a lot of Marriott shows up here, Peter Pan. And
oh, yeah.
Harris
She's been around. She's
Baby.
A real pro.
Exactly. Yes. She got a leave of absence. She's on Broadway right now and to come and do this in kind of a homecoming. So
and you have
here,
someone else from
here.
Cats, too. I mean, from Wicked. I'm from Wicked.
Oh, who's that?
Gene.
Oh, Gene Wigand, of course.
Yeah, he just got off a year doing playing the Wizard.
Yep, yep, yep. And it turned out perfect timing. And it's great having Gene back. Of course, he and Kathy had teamed up on Goodbye Girl you know, sometime
yes,
back.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
We're having a lot of fun with it. We just started the preview process Wednesday
tell us
night.
A little bit of the storyline. It's older couples, or
you know, there's four people in it. There's a younger couple and an older couple. In that it follows them through the younger couple. It follows them from the wedding through 5-10 years of their marriage. And the older couple, it's picking them up around year 15 of their marriage into the start of Empty Nesters. So it's a lot of fun for everybody can relate. Absolutely,
yeah,
anybody can relate.
It does make it universal, yes.
Right, in some way. And it's just a terrific group of actors that have. And the show has developed from almost a feeling of vignettes to much more of a through line with these characters as the authors realized that these issues are universal and you can actually, one character can and will go through all these experiences in their marriage.
Well, that's terrific. And of course it's a musical because that's what we do, right? Theater does musicals.
Yep.
And, but it's part of your guys' mission to not only do musicals, but make sure that the story comes through real strong, because I know that's one of the things that people say, that when they see shows here, it isn't all about fluff. It's the story comes through as one of the main characteristics.
It's really something you have to pay attention to when you have an arena theater that's as intimate as ours, that even though we have 900 seats, it doesn't really even feel like 900. It feels very, very intimate. And when you're in arena or in the round and the audience is that close, our furthest seat is as close as, say, the auditorium front row is.
Right, it's like
stage.
Eight rows. It's
exactly.
Like that. Yeah.
You're guaranteed a seat the first 8 rows. And but when you're that close, it better be honest storytelling. Whether it's fluff, whether it's high drama, it needs to be honest. And I think that's why there's a lot of shows. We've been able to get a lot of shows here first as they're launched into the regional market from Broadway, because it's a great venue to take a fresh look at a show and not worry about a large physical production, which we can't do anyway.
Well, the best example of that is what you did with Miss Saigon, which a lot of people think is the best thing Marriott Theater's ever done.
Thank you. Yeah, the funny thing was so many people referred to in their articles and discussions on Miss Saigon, saying that, for instance, that's one show that Marriott would never be able to do. Because
right, I remember people saying that. And then you went
with 12
trucks. Was that your challenge?
Well, at that point, we already had the rights to it, and so we kind of got a chuckle out of that. And then, of course, we realized, oh my gosh, what if they're right? What if we can't? And, of course, the first meeting was, well, what do we do with the helicopter? And the one question I was asked in interview after interview was, well, how do you do the helicopter? And I think that's an example of what we do well here because of the arena situation is, and the way we approach it is, well, we're not going to do the helicopter because we can't. We don't have that type of a theater. But what we can do is focus on, in that instance, the people left behind, which was based on that famous picture in Life magazine of the helicopter landing.
And you can see in their eyes the helicopter landing, and you had the sound. I don't know, you did something with the sound
system.
We had
subwoofers out in the house, and we had wind going. And what we capitalized on was the audience's imagination, which is always greater than anything you can realize
on
stage.
And that's the goal of theater, to really stimulate that.
So the audience could have sworn the helicopter was landing on top of the theater. You know, and that's how we did it. Actually, it was very simple but very effective.
But I think you made the story come across a lot, because you know, most productions of that show are overproduced. I think that was the tendency in those $10 million Broadway productions. But you guys,
right, that was
it
the era.
Sang beautiful and with lighting, which is the other thing you guys do. And by the way, let me say that one of the reasons you guys get regional rights is I think these big producers know that the quality that you guys do.
Thank you. Long before I even came here, the focus has always been on the actor, on casting. You know, casting is everything. You can have the most unbelievable set in the world, but if you don't have the actors to top it off, it's just not going to happen. And as I said before, especially in an intimate setting. And again, Saigon was an example of, it was actually a very small story. It was a story of basically five people. So it actually played very well in a small space. You know, Sweeney Todd played well in a small space. It, of course, it was originally conceived as a more of a chamber piece. But there's, you know, there's a lot of shows that big mega musicals we're looking towards. Les Mis, for instance, next year.
Yeah, a lot of people are curious how you're going to do the big battle scene.
Yeah, so am I.
I have a feeling that the stage is going to be rotating.
The production meetings are very fun, believe me.
Yeah.
And we always start with, you know, no bad ideas, you know, don't worry about money, none of that. And then we go from there. But that's actually a story of a lot of people. It's very epic, obviously. But each story unfolds one at a time, and so I think it's going to work rather well. And of course, it's a great score. And
oh yeah,
if a show's good, it's going to play.
Well, that's for sure. You're also doing The Producers coming up. That's the show after this.
Yeah, that is going to be fun. We're the first theater to do it. There's a lot of eyes on us to see how the audiences are going to react. Of course, it started in Chicago.
That's true.
And
yes,
when it began its pre-Broadway tryout here, there was a lot of controversy, as there always is with Mel Brooks, as far as the Springtime for Hitler and the treatment of that in the show.
Well, he offends everybody in the show, right?
He's the Don Rickles of musical theater now, and who I just saw this morning on Regis.
Is he still around?
I love Don Rickles.
Yeah, I do too.
Which says a lot about me.
Yeah.
Now, that's comedy. But you know, it's one of those, if you really listen to what's being said, you know, it's not offensive. It's being held up for ridicule. But Mel Brooks says it very well in his interviews that, you know, it's basic, it comes down to, you got to laugh or you're going to cry. We have to be able to laugh, not to forget. You know, we have to be able to laugh, not to, you know, to dismiss the lessons we've learned.
Plus, it's a style. It's done in a way that it doesn't take itself that serious. It's obvious that he's
absolutely
what he's doing,
and it's you know, and it's in the script.
Plus, it's an old time Broadway musical. It's structured like the old time shows.
Absolutely,
and that's one of the things I like about it.
Absolutely is. But it was controversial when the movie came out. And
oh sure,
he won an Academy Award for the writing of that. It's going everything. You know, the controversy is good. You know, that means it's making people think.
Plus, you're going to reimagine. I'm sure you guys are going to reimagine it. I'm interested in how you're going to do the Springtime for Hitler number.
I can tell you again, the production meetings are very fun. When you have Mark Robin involved, you know it's going to be. You know it's going to be a good time.
Yeah, and it'll dance well.
It'll dance well, and it'll have great costumes.
Well, that's one of the other things that I give you credit for is you do use top directors. And I know you've used more than just Mark, but Mark and David Bell and Dominic Messini,
right.
Those are three of the best anywhere.
Absolutely. I mean, David Bell actually was director of the first show that I did here. Dominic Messini has been here that long. I mean, I'm very lucky in that I inherited a theater with a very mature staff, not in age, but as far as longevity. I have a stage manager that has been here for going on 30 years, and that's true of the entire staff, costume, designers, everything.
Yeah. And one of the things that is what you guys do with lighting. When you don't have the big sets, when you do the arena, so much you do with the lighting. Case in mind was Beauty and the Beast, what you did with that.
Well, and Beauty and the Beast was one of those where you needed, you know, sometimes we can, in the back of the house, or you through suggestion, you can give locales. But Beauty and the Beast, really, we had to have locales on stage. And, of course, we can't, with arena, have these big, you know, backdrop-type sets. And Diane Ferry Williams, who's been our lighting designer, again,
she's
for
fabulous,
a long time,
yes,
and 100 shows, sculpted the set really out of lighting. Lighting arena is incredibly difficult, more so than any design department, because you don't have the luxury of, you know, having lights out over the audience shining on the stage and all this, because it's going to go right into the audience's face. So all of this has to be accomplished without going into the, you know, the front row of the audience.
Plus she has to light it for the staging, for the blocking, because you're playing the four sides.
Exactly.
So
exactly.
That just adds to it. I remember
it's an art form.
What you did with Sunset Boulevard. Everyone's trying to figure out how are they going to do the big car scene early and then the staircase and all.
Right.
But what you did, I guess it was strips.
All the scrims
with video.
That came down. Yeah. Yeah.
And no matter what angle you're at, you could see. I thought that was just genius.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
came up with that?
You know, I think, again, one of the strengths of this theater is it you know, as corny as it sounds, is its teamwork. I think we have a unique situation compared to, you know, I know a lot of other theaters I've been a part of that from day one, it's the entire team. We start with the whole production. Our first production meeting starts with the entire staff of stage managers, designers, basically anybody that wants to come. But what the first thing we do is latch on to, well, why do we want to do the show? You know, because you have to have something that you're passionate about, whether it's this because we love the score, because we love the challenge of the helicopter, because we love the challenge of casting. So we become enrolled in that. And then as we look at the show, we start with the problematic sections, and it's really through brainstorming. So I honestly couldn't tell you whose idea was the scrims, who had the idea for the helicopter.
Kudos to you for being the maestro that can orchestrate this.
It's very easy to sit back and just and take the credit for everybody.
I'm sure some of it's managing egos, too. I'm sure that's always part of it.
Well, we're all ex-actors here, so actually I think that's part of the team also. Almost everybody.
Yeah, that's true.
Almost everybody is.
But getting back to some of the regional premieres you guys have done through the years, Grand Hotel, The Goodbye Girl, of course, Cats. What Mark Robin did with Cats. I remember interviewing Mark and saying to him, "How did you make it dance so well on that small stage?"
On a 28-foot slab
of
cement.
And he stopped. He says, "It's not the small stage. It's the space I have to work with." And I thought back and I go, "Darn, that makes sense."
Yeah.
And I know part of it is not only is using people who are known quantities who know how to work the stage.
Right, and know how to work arena. And Mark, you know, was one of our performers.
Yeah.
Mark had performed on this stage a lot. And
he got at the old Evergreen Park, Drury Lane, is similar setup to you guys.
And he was and is. He's a great performer. Not to say just because you're a great dancer, you're going to be a great choreographer, or a great actor, you're going to be a great director, because that really would diminish Mark's unbelievable talents. You know, because not everybody that's a great singer can be a great music director or, you know.
Well, actors tell me Mark is the most organized guy they've ever run across.
To the point where, yes, I completely ridicule him in front of every cast as we start the process when he comes in and hands us all our binders, including the producer, about what the show is.
With the note cards and everything, right? And the tape and everything, right?
Yeah, it's kind of like, well, I'll just see it press night.
I mean, that's incredible.
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's the way you juggle a career that's as busy as he is. And David Bell is another one where there's, you know, they've got a million things going on. They're directing here, they're directing there. You've got to be that organized.
Yeah, and also, since you guys go 52 weeks out of the year, there aren't too many theaters in America that do that. I mean, one show ends, and was it 4 or 5 days later the next one starts?
Yeah, we close the show on Shenandoah, closed Sunday night, and we opened Married Alive on Wednesday night. When I first came here as an actor, we used to open with the Wednesday matinee even. So now it's a luxury having 72 hours. But, you know, that's the joy of being a corporate theater.
but you only have, 14 days of rehearsal? This is what?
Yeah, we rehearse 2 weeks, and we have a rehearsal space up the road that mimics the
But let's get back on it. 2 weeks?
2 weeks.
I know the little storefront theaters, you know, 6 weeks, 2 months of rehearsal.
That's
how
why
in the
casting,
world do you...
That's why casting is everything. Absolutely.
And being, of course, being equity, having top professionals.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And It is a very unique process. It's another reason that we're lucky we have such longevity with our staff, because it really does frustrate a lot of directors that we've brought in for the first time because they're not used to such a schedule. We don't close down as other theaters do for a week to do tech. And
so you have another place you actually do the rehearsal.
Exactly.
And how much tech time do you have, which means
one
in
day.
The theater? One day.
We close a show on Sunday. We change the set over on Monday. Tuesday, the actors come in for 1 8-hour rehearsal. They walk through the show, and then we open on Wednesday.
You know what's incredible about that? Anyone who's been to Marriott Theater, and most people around Chicago have at one time or another, they're flawless shows. I have never seen a mistake. And I've got that little bit of that director's eye. You know, if there's one guy a little off step, or if somebody misses a cue, or the light hits and the guy's, you know, 10 feet over. And I have not seen any of that in your shows. That is absolutely amazing.
Thank you. I mean, we have great subscribers. And, of course, when we start the preview process the first week, you know, our preview performances before we show it to the press, and the subscribers know they're coming to previews. They're very supportive. So we're really able to use that preview process.
Do you do talkbacks with them?
No, you know, we never have.
Okay.
First person that's ever even asked me that.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that interesting?
Well, some theaters do, but you guys have moved beyond that, though.
A lot of times I'll go out and I talk to the audience before a preview performance, and I use them for, you know, picking shows and you know, little. I have, you know, 800 people sitting there as a, you know, I use them as a marketing tool. And but you have to, if you're going to put yourself out there for questions, you have to be willing to be asked the tough ones.
Like, yeah, that's
my
true.
My gosh, you've gained a lot of weight. And that's usually what I get.
Well, that's a sign of a successful person. There's no doubt.
Or hungry.
But you guys have built Marriott up to just under 40,000 subscribers.
40,000 subscribers, yeah.
I've heard that is number one in any regional theater in America.
Any theater in the country, yeah.
And you've kind of cut it off, right? I mean, you have to keep so many for, like, exchanges and so forth, right?
Exactly. Of course, we've been doing it a long time. We started subscription in 1982 is when we became actually one of the first theaters to even have a subscription. Kerry Walker was the producer.
He did a great job of building this, right?
Yeah, he sure did. Yeah. He and Diane Early, who was mm-hmm. the longtime artistic director, both good friends. I still hear from Kerry every week.
Does he come in and see the shows?
Once in a while, he does.
He lives in Texas, I understand.
Washington.
He's
from Texas.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. He's from Washington. He's got a little house over in Spain, overlooking the Mediterranean, which was always his dream. And so he's doing great. He's a character. And, of course, I was associate producer under him for 10 years after I
So you learned from one of the masters, huh?
That's what he tells me.
Well, you've kept it going. But, I mean, 39,000, that's a dream for any theater group. So you kind of go into each year with the people behind you. And I can see that's a two-edged sword. One is they trust you because they wouldn't mm-hmm. be laying out their money to pay,
sure.
what, five shows season, correct?
Right, five show season.
So they're paying, but you guys have the money in advance, so you have nice budget.
Yeah.
Of course, it's a house of cards. If you guys don't produce great shows, I'm sure that could change, but so that the trust goes both ways.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting is rarely ever do people ever ask, well, how did you get 40,000 subscribers, or how do you sell for, you know, 300,000 tickets a year or whatever. And it's the same for any theater. You do the way you do it is you give audiences what they want. Now there's all sorts of mission statements for different theaters. There's all sorts of niche audience segments, you know, that theaters go after. You know, it's no secret we're a populist theater. We do musical theater. But I think we've targeted our audience, and there's a longevity and, as you said, a trust. And the trick is then to keep 40,000 subscribers.
Well, because you just don't retread the same musicals. I mean, you do classic musicals when you can rethink them. I mean, Pajama Game was terrific, West Side Story.
Right.
Oliver was one of the best things.
Wasn't it?
I remember Hedy Weiss's comment about Oliver. She said they just ought to get a wagon and just hook it up on the wagon and bring it downtown and would run for a year.
You know, and that's an issue of we sat down, we wanted to do Oliver. Oliver was actually the first professional show I was in when I was 10, so I always wanted to do it again. And they had done it here years and years and years ago. So we said, I said, I want to do Oliver. And so, I talked to David about it, and he's like, well, why? Why do we want to do Oliver? All of us have done it so many times. And we latched on to, but wouldn't it be great to do it as if it was the novel on stage? And
yeah, that really made it work. Yeah,
you know, and you've got people like Kate Fry and
well, casting was the other thing, and I always give kudos to you guys for keeping great people working even in so what we might call minor roles. That to me, that's loyalty. And
well, that's Chicago.
Yeah,
and you don't find that in any other place,
right?
There's no ego. The country, absolutely.
In New York, I'm a leading man. I can't be a here. They don't mind.
My roommate in New York was always, Terry, if you're not acting in New York, you're not acting. It's kind of like, yeah, well, you know what? I never had to have another job other than this business.
In the meantime, I've heard.
I didn't want to wait tables for 3 years.
Yeah, I've heard that the New York actors bust their rear end to get auditions here at Marriott. That this is one of the theaters they really want. You know,
a lot of them end up staying here. Yeah. You know, I'm a transplant. I came here in 1981 from New York and it ended up staying eventually, you know, because I loved Chicago. But there's a different mentality here. We have, you know,
it's really no stars here, right? No, I mean, one day you're the star and the next day you're in the ensemble.
You know, one of our understudies for Married Alive is Heidi Kettering because, you know, she did the workshop for us.
Is that right?
And, you know, she wasn't available for the production. We have a wonderful girl that we brought in from New York and Kelly Sullivan, who's really going to be a treat for everyone to see. But then, you know, they changed their schedule and Heidi wanted to be a part of the production. So here's Heidi Kettering sitting there as an understudy who blew everybody away in Funny Girl. You know, she's going to star in Little Women for us at the end of the season.
Oh, great.
But, you know, Aline Robertson will do Gypsy, and then she'll turn around and, you know, do
all
a little
of
cameo.
Like you said, Greg Winkler and Robbie Lehman.
Absolutely.
All of our top people.
Absolutely. Bernie Yvonne, Matt Raftery. I mean, we've had people here for years and years and years. And I think that's what I'm probably most proud about is that we have so many Chicago actors that have earned a living in one of the hardest businesses in the world by doing what they want to do.
Well, Paula Scarfano and John Rieger have told me that that's the case, and they work a lot here. If you put your ego aside and you're cooperative and you're willing to, you know, do whatever it takes to get a show going, you build that reputation, then you can work year round.
Because you don't do it to get rich. I mean, if you put this much energy almost into any other job, you'd make a lot more money. You know, and we've all been friends for, you know, Aline Robertson's my best friend. Bernie Yvonne, 20 plus years. Paula Scarfano, 25 years. Mark Robin. We've all grew up together. And I think what I'm most proud of is we're all still in the business in one way or the other.
And still producing top quality, you know, productions. I'm sure there's a trust factor there, and you can complete some of their sentences that they might start, right?
Exactly. It's trust, and you know that they're doing it for the right reason, and the audience picks up on that. You know, why else would you stay in the business for 25 years unless you absolutely had to perform, and if it wasn't your passion? You know, it's something that you're just
it
more
comes
than
across
to.
That in shows. I have seen some of your shows. You know, I always come to opening nights, but I've also come back to your shows later on. From, you know, there's always someone who I can get a ticket from 5 or 6 or 10 weeks into the show, and it's always even better, a little sharper.
Yeah,
I mean, it does not. Your shows never get stale. Yeah.
You know, because it is such a fast process. They continue to grow and find new things.
But just what a workout the actors get. I mean, with the arena stage, they're on the dead run coming in and out of all the scene changes.
Yeah, I tell you, up and down the aisles and around and eight times a week. It is a workout.
And the audience reaction to your shows is usually very, very strong, too.
Yeah, again, you know, having that many subscribers, which is, you know, it's about half of our business is, you know, we start off with half the tickets already sold, as you said, which is a great feeling. But when you have people that really are enrolled in the theater, and because they're subscribers, they have this loyalty and they feel that they're a part of the process, and they know that any given show isn't going to appeal to somebody. Usually it's about, in my mind, I always look at it as 10%, 10 to 20%. If you get over 20%, then you know you have trouble with the show. But because we do classics and new works and seldom seen and reworked and all of that, you know, you try to run the gamut within the musical theater genre, within the populist musical theater genre, as we put together next season. You know, it's what we're going through
right now.
Well,
tell us, what you have coming up. I know you have The Producers and then Little Women finish out the season.
Right, and then Les Mis kicks off.
Well, you know, I'm that's one of my all-time favorite shows. I can't wait till you guys do it.
Yeah. We haven't announced next season, but I will tell you we have a very exciting new work coming up.
Okay.
That we've been working on with David Bell, that is based on a Horatio Alger novel with the unknown music, lesser-known music of George Cohan.
Wow, because I'm a big fan of George Cohan.
Well, and if you loved Oliver, you're going to love this, and it's called The Bowery Boys, and we're really excited about it. We've done a couple of readings with actors, and we're going to do a workshop this spring.
And David Bell's directing?
David Bell's going to direct, yep. Okay. Matt Raftery is choreographing with him.
Boy, that sounds exciting. Yeah. Well, a couple of shows that I'm wondering about, if you've ever considered, Irma LaDouche.
It's a great show. It's it's a great show. We've never done it. That actually would be
Tree Grows in Brooklyn with a little change of an ending.
Have you been talking to Paula Scrifano? Because she's always pushing that.
No, but Paul and I agree on that one. Yeah, it's such a great score.
It is, and it's a great story.
And it would dance well.
Yeah.
It would dance well. Somebody like Mark directing would really make that show.
Yeah.
Have you considered that?
Yeah, actually we have. And, you know, again, it's always putting together the puzzle. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shows. I'm going to go to Ravinia this summer to see what is my favorite
musical. Most Happy Fellow.
The Most Happy
Fellow.
Yeah,
I'm going to see that too.
Which we've never done here. It's a gargantuan show.
The last time it was done, if I remember, Light Opera did it.
Yep.
About 10, 12 years ago.
And Drury Lane Oakbrook has done it.
Have they? Okay. Hey, but that's more of an operatic, but it's a big score.
I love it.
Yeah, I do
I
too.
Love it.
Lester was such a great talent.
I got to do it with Alan Gilbert in
Oh,
Los
you were in that
Angeles
show. Okay.
As Joey a long, long, long time ago. But I love the score, and I think we could do it well in that there's like something like 11 major roles in it.
Yeah.
Something for everybody, but it's just trying to figure out how to fit it.
Well, in the interest of time, I always like to get your background. Besides being the executive director here, and I know you have a strong musical background, but you have an actor background. I remember seeing you in Fiddler in 1982.
Now going way back to gas lamps, practically.
give us some of your background.
You must have been here on a little school trip.
No. I've been coming to Marriott for a lot of years. It's always been great.
Well, actually, I started as a child actor, and I just got back from California from a regional theater that I started in when I was 10 that are celebrating their 40th anniversary. And I went back almost all 40 years. I was there. I went back 38 years with this theater. But always done musicals. I did about 100 of them or so around the country. And, you know, in those years, Marriott always went into New York every year and did auditions. And just as a fluke, you know, I auditioned and was brought out to do Fiddler on the Roof and Kismet, which were, you know, back-to-back shows. I went back to New York after those two shows. Every couple of years I'd come and do something because I had such a great time here. And literally, eventually I just stayed because I ended up with so many friendships here. I loved the standard of living here and just the whole Chicago community. And I had been doing it for a long time at that point. And I wanted to do other things. And you're afforded that in Chicago.
Yes, you are.
I had a performing arts studio downtown, and then I became the music director here at Marriott for 10 years, and then the associate producer when I stopped performing. But, you know, and it was really, a week before I stopped performing, if someone said, would you ever give up performing, I'd say, you're nuts.
Yeah,
but it was just one of those things.
That's my question. Would you go back on stage?
No.
You've retired?
I sang in San Francisco a couple days ago, last week, and I thought, oh, my gosh, warming up. You're making sure I look all right. I get through it?
Of course, you have understudies, but I was going to say, if something happened and you had to grab the book and go out there.
Well,
have you ever had to do that?
The most ridiculous thing happened here with Robbie Lehman, who's one of our stars of producers coming up. We were doing Ross Lehman. He goes by. We were doing Hot Mikado
right,
a couple years ago.
Fabulous in that.
Mother's Day, right at the top of the run. No understudy was ready yet. We had just barely opened, and we literally were sold out, and all I could see were boutonnieres. I just happened to be in the office doing some work. It was a weekend, and I was in dungarees and a sweatshirt. The stage manager called down and said, Robbie just collapsed, and this is like 10 minutes, literally 10 minutes.
And here's a guy with
curtain.
Unlimited energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I go running upstairs, and you know, he wasn't sure what it was, but he was violently ill,
ooh,
could not get off the floor, and obviously couldn't do the show. And when they had called for an ambulance, and an usher comes in and says, I'm closing the lobby doors. And I said, don't you dare. Leave the lobby doors open. I want them to see Robbie rolled out on the gurney so that they know we're not lying when we go out and say the lead is sick. And obviously by that point we knew he was all right, but it was like a food poisoning type thing. But there we were with a sold-out house. So I don't know how I was talked into it, but I went out, I explained it, and I said, the cast is all dressed, so we're going to do the show anyway without the lead. I'm going to come out and narrate. I'm going to tell you what what's going on? We're going to do all the production numbers. Well, for the next 2 hours, I made an absolute fool of myself running out and saying, now, if Robbie was here, you'd see him in this like brown pinstripe suit, and he'd be running around saying this and saying that, and then enters. It ended up just a blast. And then afterwards, of course, I think, what the heck did I just do?
I heard, by the way, I wasn't there, but I did hear that you were terrific.
It was fun.
Yeah, that people said it was, because they knew what, you know, what was going on.
It was
and
fun.
The honesty of it, but the old acting instincts came out.
I'm not sure what kind of instinct
it was. How many refunds did you give?
You know, we didn't give any.
Is that right?
We didn't give any. That was a nice, generous audience. Because I had offered, obviously, at the beginning.
Yeah, sure you have.
I said, we're going to give it a shot. Obviously, I'll give you your money back if you want, but everybody stayed, and we just had a great time. I'd never do it again. But,
well,
and
don't say never.
I made sure understudies were ready much earlier after that.
But that's a terrific story. That's just an example of the show goes on. So that won't be your last performance.
I don't know.
Somebody will talk you into something. Well,
maybe I'll do something with
give
Mark
us a
Robin.
Little. We're just about out of time here. Your show's run. This is up in Lincolnshire in Marriott Theater. Mm-hmm. Right on the internet.
Yep.
What days do you run?
Wednesday through Sunday. We have matinees on Wednesday and Sunday, and two shows on Saturday, and the others are all evening.
Is there a number that they can call?
Sure. The box office number is 847-634-0200.
So you very much suggest that they call ahead and get reservations.
That would be great, right? Just to check the availability of when you would like to come.
How often are there tickets available for walk-ups?
The weekends, you know, are tougher. Again, because of having 40,000 subscribers, a lot of shows go quickly, especially in the beginning of, you know, of runs. And we don't advertise in the paper that much. So
you don't really need to when you have that base. Isn't that a good position to be in?
Yeah, from your mouth to God's ears. Okay.
Give them the number.
847-634-0200.
Well, you got to be proud of the work you've done. And
thanks, Tom.
I'm so excited about the new show coming up in the season. It's
Let
always
me know what you think. I know you will.
I will, yeah. It's always a treat. You know, I think you're the only theater that I have never not recommended a show. And I think almost every show is a highly recommended. And it's not that I'll call it, you know, if I didn't like it, I'll say so. It's the quality that you guys do. You know, they say musical theater is in the devil's in the details.
Yeah.
And you guys get that right.
Well, we got a lot of the devils here, and I'll pass on your compliments to all of them.
Well, they do great work, and keep up the good work, and listen to Paula. Look into Tree Girls in Brooklyn. I think that would be a major treat.
Yeah, I shall do that. Right.
Thank you. Thanks, and folks, thanks for listening. And remember, go see a play this week. Mm-hmm.